Introduction. I remember that first conversation well. I'm like, who's this guy who introduces himself as Schreier? Sitting two seats away from me in the base medrash, if you remember where we were sitting. Being back here brings back such a really genuinely like a flood of emotion. First of all, seeing so many of you here. I've had this chus of being so close with for a lot of years. It's really sort of emotional. I sat next to Shmuel for a couple of years in Beis Medrash. We had this amazing relationship, and when we came into YU this year and his seat was vacant, it was like a little sad moment of, and certainly that's true by Ike and by Josh and so many of the rest of you as well. And seeing you here and seeing you thrive here is an enormous source of nachas. Also brings back these memories. I became the Ravin Einstein when I was probably Rabbi Schreier's age, maybe a year older. I was like 28, 29, around that age. And it was a little bit scary for me, the idea of becoming a rabbi of a shul. We had, as Rabbi Schreier has, you know, you get thrown into a rabbanus with like top-notch Talmid Chachamim. Ashar, you'll appreciate the story. I came in, I was still learning in YU, and I was a Rebbe in the high school. And before I became the Rav, I was nervous about getting asked any shailas, you know. I'm not an anxious person at all, but I couldn't sleep at night. They're going to ask me questions. They're going to know I know nothing. So, and I was just like dabbling to Hashem, tell my wife, honey, please, like, let him ask the question. You know, my spoon fell into a cold sink and nothing was a ben yomo and there's no hot water. And like, let that be the first question. So we're packing the truck right across from 1945. Usually when you give a shiur, you don't give this like 20-minute introduction, but there's a lot of like emotions being back here. And somebody came over to me, and I think, although those of you who are in your fourth year would appreciate this. And he said, Rabbi, I'm starting my fourth year OBGYN rotation tomorrow. This is like 9 o'clock at night after I'm unpacking my 90th box of like Svarim. He's like, I'm supposed to assist on a tubal ligation tomorrow morning. Is the mutter for me to assist in a tubal ligation? Now, if you know anything about the shiloh tubal ligation, there's like literally 5 different shilohs involved. Very complicated issues by Moshe. And this is the first shiloh I'm getting as I'm packing the truck. And I'm like, here's your shepherd's number. Call him, and I'm going back to the Heights, the Synthesis Medrash. And so that was an introduction. So anyways, I got used to the idea of being a rabbi. I walked into the shul in 35 in the 28th floor. And somebody, I'm sure you had the same experience, somebody's pointed to where the rabbi's supposed to sit. Do you even get a chair in here? Is the rabbi? So somewhere back. And when I was looking at like the rabbi's chair, I'm like, I can't sit there, I'm not sitting there, I'm not. So eventually I got used to it. But then I started getting Rabbi Neuberger's mail. You know, Rabbi Jeffrey Neuberger. I don't know if you still get Rabbi Neuberger. And something about getting Rabbi Neuberger's mail and living in Rabbi Neuberger's apartment just made me, you know, freak out again. And then the other problem becoming the rabbi, again, sorry for this long autobiographical experience, the rabbi before me was Rabbi Kalman Top, who's an amazing person. Some of you may know him from Yom Yisrael Woodmere and now in Beth Shalom in Los Angeles. So they made Rabbi Top, because he's good at basketball, Rabbi Top and I were actually Karusas and Rosenzweig Shir. And just to tell you about what it was like when you're young to learn, we used to learn Minchas Chinuch 12:30 to 1:30 in the morning for a couple of years. Back when 12:30 actually seemed like a normal hour to be awake and learning. So he was here as the rabbi, and they made him the captain of the basketball team. And that team went 7-0, and they won the championship. So I became rabbi, and they said, oh, Rabbi Blass, you play basketball, so we'll make you the captain of the basketball team. The team went 0-7. We finished last. It was like a disaster. So anyway, these were, but the reality was the years spent here were truly, I think it's fair to say, probably the 4 happiest years of my life. I was very happy before. I've been very happy since then. But the years spent here were just very, very special. In a whole host of ways. For those of you who are new to Einstein, you may not even have a sense about the it's really the godless and the uniqueness of this community. But whenever I think about how much I loved Einstein, I think about this really extraordinary Purim Suda that we had one night in our apartment, 1945 4A. If your apartment looks like garbage, it's probably from that poor Masuda from 13 years ago where the apartment has not recovered. And we had, you know, 40 people at the Suda. We took out all the furniture, and we had guys there who had just been Rabbi Sachs this year in YU and Rabbi Schechter this year and Rosenzweig this year, together with people who had never, ever been to a Jewish meal. They just came to the first. And we went around the room, each person speaking about the experience of being there that evening. And it was just this, like, this magnificently magical moment that really epitomized the 4 years that we had here. And it's just really great being back. I just wanted to just acknowledge Rabbi Schreier. At the end of the year last year, when Rabbi Hinden, those who don't know Rabbi Hinden, Rabbi Hinden's an exceptional human being when he was leaving. So a couple of people from Einstein, knowing that I know some of the guys in YU, so they called and asked, you know, you sort of know the position, can you suggest anybody? So really the first person I thought about was Rabbi Schreier, somebody who combines a tremendous depth of knowledge, a real Talmid Chacham, a brilliant person, a great speaker, but with a real just likable quality, a real normal quality to him. And I know Rabbi Schreier is new, but I look forward to, in the same way that 10, 12 years later, after leaving Einstein, some of my closest friends with the Einstein congregants, we're still very, very close. I'm confident that same relationship was built with Rabbi Schreier over the course of his time here, and I'm probably confident it's happened already now. You know, we were so spoiled when we left here. I grew up in Baltimore. I went to a shul called Shomri Emuna, Baltimore. You know Shomri Emuna? This is a great shul, a great community of people that were just balabatim, but people just with a certain serious nature. The Rosh Hashanah davening and the Yom Kippur davening, I would sit next to our friend and our neighbor, who was a lawyer, and I remember him even as a kid, like hearing him cry under his talus. And that's what I was used to growing up as a kid. I then went on to spend the next, you know, 15 years in YU Beis Medrash, where I'm still there now. And in the 4 years here, we're also the Yom Kippur davening. Do you have Yom Kippur davening here at Einstein? Rosh Hashanah also, or no, just Yom Kippur? Yom Kippur davening, it was just, you know, it was a special davening. People really came to daven. You know, you wouldn't think about having people talk or fool around. And so when I came to our shul in Muncie, which is also, it's a, you know, good, really good group of people, but it's already, you're leaving sort of, you know, YU and the Beis Medrash and the environment here. And I made the fatal mistake my first year as being the Rav, a mistake I tried to not make since then, that during Unisana Tokef, I turned around to see what was going on, you know. And again, you know, it's almost like you're asking sort of, you know, for a question you may not want the answer to. Well, you know, the average person is sitting here davening, but there's a group of people. It's like I was so scarred by this event, sitting in the back corner of the shul, and these people always manage to find the back corner, no matter where it is. You know, they'll be in the back corner of the Titanic, the back corner. There's a certain personality type that's going to find the back corner of any shul or any classroom. And I turned around, and four or five of this chevra were, like, talking right in the middle of, like, you know, mi chye, mi amus. And they're speaking about, you know, the Yankees game from the day before. And I thought I was just going to, like, collapse on the spot. You know, oh, gosh, like, what I get myself into, and what's going on, and the state of Klal Yisrael. And I felt, like, sort of so angered by that experience. And the reality is, after I sort of stopped being so, you know, indignant, as only like a relatively young person could be indignant, I stopped and I thought that of course, you know, I was so lucky to go through the experiences that I had in life, certain parents, certain community, my rebbeim, the yeshiva. But if you're a person who comes to the davening Rosh Hashanah, and you don't really, your Hebrew is not very good, you haven't had the paradigm of what it means to be in a Beis Medrash or in yeshiva or like a yeshiva davening or a serious davening, and you don't really feel particularly God-centered, you know, how many people really are conscious of a Kodesh Baruch Hu? So, you know, what's the chance of having a truly meaningful tefillah? And then specifically by Rosh Hashanah and by Yom Kippur, specifically by Rosh Hashanah, there is a different component. And that component, Rosh Hashanah, is that it's even hard to know exactly what the theme of the day of Rosh Hashanah is. It's a day of Malchus, it's a day of Tshuva, it's a day of Din. like Yom Kippur, I think the average person would say, okay, it's a day of tshuva. I have one day, 25 hours, day of tshuva. By Rosh Hashanah, where this event took place, you know, to even sort of grasp what exactly the theme of the day is and how the themes integrate into each other, that itself is complicated. But even more complicated is if I ask a person, what is the nature of din? What is the nature of this judgment? What exactly is at stake? What's on the line on Rosh Hashanah? What is it should be that is in a person's consciousness and tefillah? I think a lot of people will be confused by that question. And the reality is that the Rishonim are confused by that question. And I want to lay out for the next few minutes why that is, and to try to give an answer, a thought that was meaningful to me. Now, I know the hour is late, people are tired, so we've both kids at home, and I also have to rush. So we're going to make this like pretty brief, but try to come up with one idea. The Gemara tells us that one of the more famous Talmudic statements in Daf Tezayin Beis in Rosh Hashanah, a famous statement by Rav Krusbadai. Now, Rav Krusbadai is not like Abaye and Rava, he's not like the household rabbinic name, but he became famous through this statement. And the statement was that there are Shlosha Svarim Niftachin, there are three books that are opened on Rosh Hashanah, and each person is evaluated. Tzadikim Gemurim, was that, how's the line go? Nechtavim v'nechtamin li'alter l'chayim. Tzadikim are sealed into a book of life. Rishayim Gemurim nechtavim v'nechtamin li'alter l'misa. Immediately they are sealed into a book of death. Beinonim tluyim v'omdim. The Beinonim are tluyim v'omdim. What's the next word? I remember? Right? Imzachin, if they are meritorious. Nechtavim l'chayim on Yom Kippur. Im lo zachu nechtavim l'misa on Yom Kippur. So these three categories, of course, everyone, and especially everyone in this room, knows that Gemara very, very well. Now, anybody have, on the most simple of levels, an issue with that Gemara? This famous Gemara of Shlosha Svarim. And it doesn't take a Lamdin, which many of you are. It doesn't take a Talmud Chacham, it doesn't take a genius, just to ask, so really the most basic of questions in this Gemara. Tzadikim Rishayim Gemurim Nechtavim V'Nechtamin Li'alter L'Chayim. Rishayim Gemurim Nechtavim V'Nechtamin Li'alter L'Misa. Anybody? What's that? What? Okay, Tshuva, right? So Tshuva, right, you would say, it's a great question, right? Isn't that what this period is for, right? I mean, even if you're Rosh Gamor, so you should be able to sort of have like a last chance, you know, Shuva Bad Meshovavim, everyone is accepted in Shuva. So, Abba, your question is a great question. It's like, why sort of make the cutoff now? Like, give everyone some time, give everyone a few days. It's a great question, and that's discussed by the Meforeshim. Anybody have another issue, problem, question, thought, feeling?
It doesn't always happen.
That's the most simple. Sometimes the most, you know, balabatish, simple questions are really the best questions. You know, this statement by Rav Krusbadai doesn't seem to bear itself out in reality. It's not true that tzaddikim gemurim nechtavim l'chayim li'alter. It's not true that rishayim gemurim nechtavim li'alter l'misa. It simply doesn't seem, at least from our perspective in the world, it's not true. So Tosos in Rosh Hashanah gives an answer that deals with that question. Tosos asks the question, and he gives an answer that resolves the question. But at least to me, again, I'm not one to critique Tosfos, is not fulfilling. It doesn't, anybody know what Tosfos says? Tosfos says that the Chayim that we're speaking about, and therefore the Chayim that we're davening for, and the din that we're davening for, is not in this world, but it's in the world to come. It's not Olam Hazeh, because Olam Hazeh, we don't know who gets sealed to Book of Life, who doesn't get sealed to Book of Life, but it's speaking about the world to come. So when we say tzaddikim gemurim nechtavim nechtamin la'alter, that means they're sealed for life in the world to come. Now, anybody have an issue with the Tosfos? So therefore, the tefillah, the focus, the entire process of din is really not about this world, but is the world to come, according to Tosfos. Anybody have an issue with that? Right. So exactly what was just mentioned it would be my issue also. I mean, every year we're getting reevaluated about the world to come. You know, you're 12 years old, you get sealed the Book of Life, the world to come. The next year you have a lousy year, and then God says, okay, forget that kid. You know, then the next year, 3 years later, I mean, every year, like, how exactly would that work? Like Jerome pointed out, you know, it's like a yearly sign to a Book of Life in the world to come that changes over the course of 90 years. It's almost like nam stabber how that would work. It was also just, again, not that the Gemara, the Rishonim, have to conform to my sensibilities, but to think that the totality of what we're speaking about in Rosh Hashanah is the world to come, to me at least, it would take away a little bit of almost, you know, the immediacy of that feeling of what's happening. I want to mention, just parenthetically, of a statement of the Gra. I don't know what the Gra means. Maybe some of you are here who are brighter than I am, can maybe, shed some light on this Gra. The Gra has a discussion in Sim Tuf Kuf Pei Beis, what is the proper greeting on Rosh Hashanah? So the Gra says that we only say Shana Tova Tikasev, not Shana Tova Tikasev V'Seichasem, because we hold like Totsos that the din is for the world to come. And because the din is for the world to come, therefore all you tell someone is, L'shana tova tikasev, you should be written for Book of Life, as opposed to Shana tova tikasev v'seichasev. You should be written and sealed to Book of Life, because we're speaking about the world to come as opposed to this world. That's what the Gra said. Everyone understand what the Gra said? Okay, I'm not sure what it means, but anybody have any thoughts about that, by all means, let me know. Okay. So that's a Shita Tosa. So it says that the whole din is din of the world to come. Fine. Anybody know who else comments on this topic? Addressing the basic question of it's not true that we see tzaddikim do die year in and year out. Anybody know who else addresses this issue? What's that? So the Ramban and the Ran and others, so they give a pshat that I guess philosophically makes sense. Probably doesn't work well in the actual reading of the Gemara. The Ramban wrote a sefer called Torah Sa'adam, which is a sefer on the laws of Avelus. The introduction to that sefer is called Shar HaGemul, which is the gate of reward. And there in that sefer, this is like another one of the Ramban's classics. You know, the Ramban was just this unbelievable human being. I mean, I guess that's the only way you can really speak about the Ramban. I once went on a job interview somewhere. They said, who's your greatest role model in life? I said, probably the Ramban. The person's like, anybody in the last like 700 years? And I said, Revolbi? He's like, well, you know, he's alive, but anybody you actually know? Or like Rav Kook maybe? Like, also not alive and not. So, you know, we finally settled on somebody. Rosa Zweig, my, you know, parents are also good, but it's not the Ramban. It's not, you know. So, you know, the Ramban was just sort of this larger than life, you know, just like Superman in all areas. So one of the Ramban's greatness, obviously, was that he was a great, the word philosopher is not right, but certainly the paradigm of the Baal Machshava in a whole host of different ways and sort of amalgamating so many different almost strands of Machshava. So the Ramban said in Shaar Gemul the following. Ramban said that when we say tzaddikim gemurim nechtavim v'nechtamin le'alter l'chayim, it doesn't really mean tzaddik, the person's actually righteous. What it means is that he's like a tzaddik bedin. He was decreed to be righteous in judgment. Namely, who is this person? This person might be a rasha, but as the Gemara points out, God wants to give schar to a person in this world to go ahead and to use up that schar so he would not be rewarded in the next world. So that person is called a tzaddik. The person might be the biggest rasha in the world, right? But he's called a tzaddik bedin. He was given a favorable judgment in this world to live a long life and a healthy life and have six cars and do all those things, right? So that he would sort of use up and accrue that so it would not carry over the next world. And so too, when it says the rishayim or nechtavim lemisa li'alter, that could be the person who's a tzaddik, but he's a rasha bedin. He's a tzaddik, but it was decreed that he die at age 18 years old, so that he gets the schar in the next world. And that was Ramban's way of addressing the issues of tzaddik v'ra'lo and all those other things of how we see that it's not true. Everyone hear the Ramban and the Ran and other Rishonim. Okay, there's another Shita brought down, the Rishonim. Anybody know who else talks about this? by the Ravid. And the Ravid comments on this in the Mishneh Torah. And the Ravid says, and this you see sort of shades and you see echoes of this in other writings as well. The Ravid said, we see a person who dies age 55. And he might have died a month after Rosh Hashanah. And you ask yourself, didn't the Gemara just promise us that tzaddikim gemurim nechtoviv nechtomim le'atul chayim, but this guy dies, you know, 2 weeks later, this person dies a month later, the person says, how could it be? The Ravid said that every person, and again, this is discussed in the Gemara, but it's a very, very difficult concept, that every person is given a certain amount of years to live in this world, and a person might have been given 40 years to live in the world. And then he dies at 55, and he might have died right after Rosh Hashanah. But meanwhile, he had extended and expanded well beyond whatever the original gezeirah was, whatever the original decree had been for his life. So when we daven for life, so you're right, the person has extended and has expanded whatever that decree is. And so too a Rasha might have supposed to live until age 90, and he dies until at 60 instead, because of his deeds. So it is. So Rishayim Geburim, or Nechtavim Lei Misa Liyater, but he's dying now, as opposed to dying in 5 years, or 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, etc. So we just view the world, sort of what's in front of our face. We don't understand, the Ravid said, the larger picture of how long the tzaddik was originally decreed as far as his life, and how long the rasha was decreed in his life as well. So that's the position of the Ravid. And we know the last position, to mention Tosfos, the Ramban, the Ravid. Anybody know anybody else who discusses this? So another position is that of the Maharal Miprag. The Maharal discusses this in a few places, but one of which is on that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Kazayin in the Chidush HaGadol. The Maharal said, if a person in fact had been a tzaddik gomor, tzaddikim gemurim nechtov nechtom le'alter l'chaim, if a person had been a tzaddik gomor, so you're right, there's no way that person would have died this year. If a person had been a Rasha gomor, said the Maharal, then that person would have died this year. But he said there's no such thing. There's no such thing as a person who's a tzaddik gomor, who's completely a tzaddik, who's untainted by sin. There's no such thing as a person who's a Rasha gomor, who is unaffected by good deeds, who doesn't have something positive about them. Therefore, said the Maharal, everyone is a Beinoni. Everyone is in this middle category. If there was a tzaddik gomor, every year he'd be decreed into life. A Rasha gomor, every year he'd be decreed for death. But that person doesn't exist. Everybody, said the Maharal, is a Beinoni. Everybody's judgment is something which is somewhat unclear. That's the fourth position. So let's mention again. Tosa says the judgment's in the world to come. The Ramban said that the tzaddikim means tzaddik bedin. The person might die because he's supposed to get more schar in the world to come. The Ravid said even though the tzaddik dies earlier than we would have thought, it's still far longer than what the decree had been for his life. And lastly, the Maharal said that even the person that you think is a tzaddik, but yet he dies over the course of the year, the person perhaps is not a tzaddik gomor. Now, quite honestly, if you would ask me, none of these four positions of the Rishonim or the Maharal, who's sort of like a transition person, feels deeply meaningful as far as what one's kavanos, one's perspectives, one's thoughts are on the Yom HaDin, judgment in the next world according to Tosfos. Like, none of these things feel like they really speak to the essence of what the day is. We're asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're only supposed to live 35 years, and make us live 38 years, and that's what the din is. So something about the perspective of the Rishonim and the Gemara didn't feel, at least for me personally, that it elevated and that it moved my thinking and my tefillos. And as a result, I maybe want to give a different suggestion. So a very famous Rambam. And the Rambam gets quote-unquote blamed, or criticized, or questioned, but the reality is it's actually a girsa on the Gemara as well. And the Rambam said, if you look in the Rambam, you go through Hilchos Teshuva, I'm sure everyone here has learned Hilchos Teshuva before. I found personally, you know, the Hilchos Teshuva is something you learn, you know, initially, depending on who you are. Rabbi Shrier learned it when he first time, you know, 6, 7 years old, when he was in first grade. I mean, the first time I learned it maybe when I was 18, 19 years old. And, you know, okay, great, I'm Hilchos Teshuva, you're supposed to do a perek a day. And then each, I guess, year, each time you learn it, this is true by the Rambam in general. You know, you understand why people spend their entire life just sort of like laboring over a word of the Rambam, but probably nowhere more true than the Rambam's Hilchos Teshuva, where each sort of word and every line and every nuance, it's just, and especially in Perek Beis and Perek Gimel, just the richness of it. And whenever I learn Rambam's Hilchos Teshuva, I think about Rav Soloveitchik describing, you know, the Rambam as a child as his only friend. Which is a little bit, I should say the Rav, it's a little bit sad, but it sort of tells you, you know, who the Rav was and his level of intelligence. Whenever I hear that about the Rav, I'm always reminded about the Rugachever. The Rugachever and the Rav were very different personalities. They were linked by the fact that their IQs were combined, you know, 800. And when your IQ is, you know, 400, you don't have a lot of friends. And the Rugachever had a personality. He was like a super, super intense person. People know about the Rugachever, he had very long hair. So part of the reason he had long hair was because, or the reason, is that he didn't want to get a haircut. Because he didn't want to go without a kisei rosh. He couldn't stop thinking and learning. He couldn't sort of turn off his brain. So he never got a haircut, so his hair was very, very long. Rav Soloveitchik also was an intense person, but there was a real, sort of like a certain gentleness. Rav Schechter has mentioned to me on many occasions, and whenever he does so, he always cries, which is not, it doesn't take much to get Rav Schechter to cry, but he used to speak that when the Rav's wife, after she passed away, so he used to go sit by her grave every Friday when he'd come back to Boston and just sit there talking to her for like 4 or 5 hours, sitting at her grave, what was happening, what was going on, what he was thinking, what he was feeling. I mean, you know, the amazing thing about the Rav was sort of the same super genius, was also a person that wrote so passionately about Yahadus and Al HaTshuva. So anyway, so the Rugachever, we said about a kid, so one time he was like walking by like a playground where the kids were playing, and he told the person he was with, he said, you know, I wish I had that growing up. That's what he told whoever he was walking with. Everyone always sort of prays to be the super genius. It's not always like all it's cracked up to be. Not that I would know, but just, so anyway, so the Rav used to describe the Rambam as like his closest friend, and you understand it because, and especially again in a work like Al HaTshuva, you know, every word and every nuance is something where there's such like a richness to it. So the Rambam said in Hilchos Teshuva that in this line by Rav Krusbadoi, so the line Rav Krusbadoi again is that the Beinoni Tluyim Va'omdin, or Tolim Va'omdin, Im Zochim Nichtavim L'chaim, if the person is meritorious, they're written to a book of life. Im lo zochin or im lo zochu nichtavim lemisa. If they were not meritorious, they're written into the book of death. Does anybody know the difference of the Rambam's formulation than what the Gemara says? So the difference of formulation is that the Rambam says that the Beinoni, im asa tshuva nichtavim l'chayim, im lo asa tshuva nichtavim lemisa. If this person, who's the Beinoni, he repents, he does tshuva, so then he's written to a book of life. Im lo asa tshuva, if he did not repent, nichtavim lamisa. Now what's the problem with the Rambam? What's the issue with the Rambam? Now again, by the way, everyone sort of blames the Rambam for this, but the Rambam is really just quoting a different gears of the Gemara that appears a little later. Yeshua?
One change is zachu versus...
Right, so, and it seems to be a big difference, right? Because zachu could be any type of zchus. Right, you know, you're walking into the lobby over here. You open the door for somebody. You say hello to the security guard. Can I tell a quick story about the security guard? Actually, one of these poor masudas. I never drink. I had too much to drink at the poor masuda, and when I had too much to drink, I end up telling people, you know, I love you. You're the greatest. You know, I guess is. It's not the worst thing, I guess. If you drink too much and you're rude, that's really bad. If you drink too much, you tell everyone what a great neshama they have. I guess there's some myelin that... Anyway, so I was in our apartment, and I walked over here to see our shul president, who was living one floor up in this building. And there's a security guard who was here, at least the last year, by the name of Daniel. This Nigerian guy. Josh, maybe his fourth year, I don't know. Jerome, he must have seen him. He's a Nigerian guy, and he was a special person. Really a soft-souled person. And, you know, like typical Nigerian. He has like 4 college degrees, and his parents are professors. They go over here, and he has a whole family. And just the biggest mensch. And as I was coming, walking in here, being escorted by some of the members of the shul, I said, Daniel, you have a beautiful soul. And he's like, Rabbi, oh, thank you so much. It's so nice. And he said, a couple years ago, I came here to speak. I was walking in. He's like, Rabbi, you have a beautiful soul. This was literally like 13 years like later. So anyway, so any little zchus, you know, you're nice to the security guard. You know, you hold a door open for somebody. And you're that beinuni. You're being like mamish omed and chayim amisa. So that should tip a person's scale. Why does there have to be the full-fledged effort of tshuva, right? And that's the question. Anybody know who most famously asked this question? Different people have asked this question, but there's one person who was sort of responsible initially for posing this question. And that was Rav Yitzchak Blaser. Rav Yitzchak Blaser, anybody know who that is? That is the Kochvei Or. Kochvei Or can be found in the back of the Or Yisrael. Rav Yisrael Salanter had 3 very famous Tamidim. One was of Naftali Amsterdam. The other was Rav Simcha Zissel Ziv, which is one of the all-time great rabbinic names, who is, of course, known as the Alter Mechelm. He was probably the most famous of all the Tamidim of Rav Yisrael Salanter. And the third was Rav Yitzchak Glaser, Rav Yitzchak of Peterburg. And also, he was a tremendous Amkun. And in his Sefer Kochvei Or, in Simin Hei, which is probably the most famous Simin in his Sefer, so he poses this question. Why does the Rambam have to say, im asa tshuva, if you repent, then nichtavim l'chaim? Just say any zechus, any good deed the person did. So the answer that he gave, and others give as well, with Aaron Cutler and Mishnah of Aaron, is that, you know, during this time, let's say the Seres Yimei Tshuva, people remember there's a Gemara about Rav. Rav was offended by the local butcher, and Rav actually went to the butcher, and he sort of presented himself. This was not a great move. Rav was warned not to do this, but Rav presented himself at the butcher shop to sort of have this person ask Mechila from Rav. It did not end well. And the question that the Kochvei Or posed is, why does Rav need to present himself to the butcher? Just stay at home and say, you know, I'm Ochel, he's a guy, didn't mean it, and he offended me, and he cursed me out, but it's fine, I'm Ochel. Why does Rav have to come for him, the butcher, to ask him Mechila and grant Mechila? So Rav Yitzchak Blaser said that in this time of year, the Seres Meshuvah of Dir Shu Hashem Behim Matzo, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is close to us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu almost presents himself to us, right, Kra'uhu, that we should call out to him. So that's what Rav was doing. Rav was sort of presenting himself. Rav was bringing himself close to the butcher in the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings himself close to us. So Rizal Blazer said that at this period of time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Behim Matzo, makes himself present, makes himself easy to be sought after, and then this person who's a Beinoni, who's sort of living between life and death, doesn't seek out a Kodesh Baruch Hu and doesn't do tshuva, so then no matter what else you did during that week, no matter how many doors you opened up, no matter how many other zechuyos you have, but that lack of asking tshuva, by definition, tilts the scales in a certain direction. By definition, negates whatever other zechus the person might have accrued, whatever other zechus the person might have done already. So that lack of tshuva is not just like another lack of a mitzvah, but it completely tilts the entire cheshbon of the Beinoni. Everyone hear that answer, Reis Blaser? There's a discussion in the Sichas Musar of Chaim Shmulevitz, and he said that this idea of the Beinoni, you've had an entire year to get your act together, you've had like one chance after another chance. And for those of us who are married here, we have some sense what that means. You have 1,000 chances to get your act together. You know, finally, like the very last, you know, moment comes, and you're still not. So that person who's a Beinoni, the language of Tluyin V'Omdin, I know it's a little bit of a graphic image, What it means in Chaim Shmulevitz, it's a person has to almost imagine that they're hanging, pluyin, like they're hanging by a rope, they're omdin, again, it's very graphic, they're standing on a chair, and that's the idea of the Beinoni. The Beinoni is not a person who just is completely in between, completely 50-50, but the person who's a Beinoni, who gets to this point after Rosh Hashanah, and he still has not established himself as a certain type of person, it's not just that he's 50-50, and one zchus, one mitzvah, is going to push him over the edge. But this is the person who's tolin va'omdim. He's standing, you know, after 365 days, 354 days, you know, with, like, the rope around his neck. So for that person, he already, like, his fate is, like, quasi-sealed already. And for that person, just doing a schus is not enough, but tshuva would be the order of the day, tshuva would be necessary, and that's why the Rambam says that a person has to do tshuva. Now, both of those answers, Rabbi Yitzchak Blaser, Rabbi Chaim Shmulevitz, and all the other answers, all assume one thing, and it's something that I, quite honestly, maybe I've been spoiled of too many years in the YU Beis Medrash. Rabbi Shiger mentioned his Rabbi Rosenzweig. Rabbi Shiger is a real Talmud of Rosenzweig. You know, I was there for a bunch of years, but to call yourself a Talmud, you know, when Shmuel, you know what I'm talking about. There's a difference between, when I used to be in Shir, so there's somebody named Rabbi Asaf Ben Arsh. Asaf Ben Arsh is in the same category about the 400 IQ, and he would fall asleep during Shir every day, every single day, one by 110, like, you can appreciate this, in the front row of Shir, and he would be completely sprawled out on his desk and Rav Rosenzweig's desk. His arms would be like in Rosenzweig's lap, and Rav Rosenzweig's a tzaddik who wouldn't say anything. And then he would wake up around 2:25, and Rav Rosenzweig would be like, "So Asaf, what do you think about, and then he would give some incredible, like, answer for 10 minutes as he's, like, rubbing his eyes and getting, the gook out of his eyes. And anyway, so there's certain Talmidim like that, which Rabbi Shrier was among them, and his brother Abi as well. So I was in Shir Baruch Hashem for a number of years, but even just being a Rosenzweig Shir for a number of years, you know, struggling to get, 89s on the Bechinas, you're still affected by both him, by the legacy of Rav Soloveitchik, by the overall environment of the yeshiva, that doesn't sort of accept anything that feels, super simplistic and childlike as far as a perspective on Yadus. And I always felt, and I was so gratified when I saw this Pachad Yitzchak, I always felt that the idea of a Beinoni, that a person who's sitting, and at the end of the year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes that account, some type of, calculator, or someone takes out a calculator and says, okay, blast again, 724 on this side, and 724 on that side, and now you have 10 days to... Something about it does not sort of seem that that's really what a Beinoni is. A person and the world, as Gemara describes, that at the end of this entire year, you have the exact same number of zechuyos / mitzvos, same idea of averos. So there's a beautiful idea. If you see one Rav Huttner, you should see this Rav Huttner. There's also an advantage for those of you who know Rav Huttner. It's short and it's pretty easy. I'm not telling you to read the 24-page Rav Huttner that takes like a PhD to understand what he's talking about. Look at Simin Yud Ches in Pachi Yitzchak and Rosh Hashanah, where he describes who's really a Beinoni. A Beinoni is a person... You can have a person who's a tzaddik, who has less mitzvos than he has averos, but that person's essence, the person's mahus, the person's definition is that of a tzaddik. And you can have a person who's a rasha, who's a person, and he might have every mitzvah, he might have far more mitzvos than averos, but his nature is crude, his nature is unfeeling. His nature might be that of rishus. It's not an issue of a quantitative, more averos, more mitzvos are the same. It's a question of what is the nature of a person. And you can have the nature of a person, and I think we've all seen this about ourselves, where we feel that we're fundamentally really quality people, even though our actions don't always match. And you could perhaps have a person, I haven't met a lot of them before, where the fundamental nature of their life is that of evil, of negativity, even though what they do day in and day out might be positive. It's the essence of a person. It's what described by Rav Huttner as the kav ba'apav shel chayim. It's like, where is your line? Who are you fundamentally? How do you define yourself? How would people who know you define you? When you look inside yourself, what is the essence of your life? And the Beinoni, says Rav Huttner, is a person where it's not a matter of X amount of mitzvos and X amount of eros. It's what is the essence of that person? And that the essence of the person, perhaps, is not defined. And to some degree, that definitely speaks to me, because there are days, honestly, where I look to myself and say, well, you know, pretty good guy, not bad. And there are days where you just feel yourself, you know, snapping at your kids, and you're frustrated, and you're this, and you see yourself being resentful, and you see this. And then you tell yourself, like, you know, is your essence a mechu'ar? Is your essence something that in any way is dirtied or unpleasant? And I think often that shifts day in and day out, the essence of man and how we see ourselves, and those closest to us, how they see us, can shift, and often is not well defined. That's a Beinoni. And for that Beinoni, where the essence of their chayim, the essence of their life, the essence of the chayim of that person is not well defined, it's not enough, said Rav Huttner, answering the question of Yitzchak Blazer, just to do a mitzvah. If you're not a defined person, and then you go to Calvary for a day. For those of you who have not been to Calvary, it's an amazingly impactful place to go and to try to be useful there. It's not enough. That's a person who has to do tshuva to make a statement to himself and to a Kodesh Baruch Hu that this is my chayim, this is my essence, this is who I really am, and this is who I want to be. And that's why a simple zechus is not enough for the Rambam. So whenever I think about the Rav Huttner, and then I go back to the Gemara by Rav Krusbadai about tzadikim gemurim nechtovim l'chayim li'alter, rishayim gemurim nechtovim l'misa li'alter, the Beinim Tulim V'omdim, the Chayim that we're speaking about is not the Chayim of the world to come, what Tosa says. It's not even the Chayim of life or death. Another year, another 10 years. I'm supposed to live for 60 years, not live for 65 years. I think what anybody who has lived for long enough understands is that there are things that are worse than death. That there are things that are worse than living and dying in this world. And what's worse is a person who's living without a chayim, without vitality, with an essence in a way that's crude. A person may live, a person may die. That to some degree is part of life, that's part of the nature of life. I think it's something that all of us who've been exposed to death before, to some degree, you can accept. What you can't accept as a person, and what we can't accept about ourselves, is to live a life that's not vital, that's not meaningful, doesn't have purpose, doesn't feel real, that's not directed, that's not connected to a Kadosh Baruch Hu in a meaningful way. That's the chayim. That's the chayim that we're mispalef for, to live that type of life. A Talmud in the yeshiva, who some of you may know, people know Josh Eisenberg, who was in Rokosberg Shir for a few years. He's in Landers now in Tzmicha. So Josh's sister passed away last year. Sister was 14, 15 years old. And she became sick from Staten Island. She was like a real Ola Tamima, like almost like the best image of like a Beis Yaakov girl. Amazing amunah, bitachon, in a simple way, but in a very beautiful way. She was a tremendous balas chesed. Anyway, so she passed away, and for weeks beforehand, she was in Sloan Catering. And she used to, when she was in Sloan Catering, she would meet other children who were really sick. She would like walk the hallways and like speak to kids in the hallways. And her brothers would come visit her. And she said, this like a day before she died, she said, Josh, I'm so lucky. Because now I really have a sense of really what it means to daven. And I see kids who are sick, what it means to daven for other people. And I really can now, like, I feel so lucky because the first time in my life, like being here, like, I really get to feel for some other people, and, like, I really, when I talk about it for Eino Hashem, like, I'm really feeling that. Yeah, and that's a person you know, in almost like a child type of way, a person who was near death, but there was a certain just like purpose and a certain vitality of spirit. And there are many people who are alive, but they don't feel they're alive. They're people who go through life without a sense of purpose or aliveness, without a sense of a depth of connection, and they just go, people just go, and each day just leads to the next. So I think that that idea of Rav Huttner, of the essence of a person's chayim, I think that's the real focus on tefillah. We're not just asking for life. We're not just asking for health. We're asking that our life means something. And that's a tefillah that we really focus on during these days in Yom Kippur, brings the entire experience, the entire focus of our own chayim into focus. So I give all of you bracha here, all of you are really doing holy work that you've all chosen, just working in YU. I have a pretty good sense what it's like to be pre-med. Even just getting through that first bio test, you know, even that, you know, that, then it's only like, you know, 10 years from there. But all of you are certain types of people who've chosen a certain derech, who are living a life of meaning. So I give all of you bracha that you continue to live that meaning, to have a real year of chayim, a year of shalom, a year of bracha, and that all of Klai Yisrael should experience real chayim, real value, real meaning, and ultimately all of us be sealed into a meaningful book of life. Thank you, everyone.